Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host, and our guest today is Sid Ryan. He's the former president of the Ontario Federation of Labour and the Canadian Union of Public Employees. And he's also the author of A Grander Vision, My Life in the Labour Movement. It's the best book I've read, written by a labour leader in Canada. Sid, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure, Phil.
I got to start you off, I guess, with what sort of the headlines and the photo ops. Fortunately, I read you on Twitter, and you provide background on what we used to call the labor beat, which doesn't seem to exist actually anymore in mainstream media. This past week, the Ontario Federation of Labour was meeting. And on the front page of the paper, I'm looking at Doug Ford, and two union leaders are standing behind him, Jerry Dias of Unifor and Smokey, as they call him, Thomas of OPSU. And they were described as big labour, representing big labor, and there was no account of course they were announcing they were there to support Doug Ford and saying, okay, you got a 15, we're going to give you the $15 minimum wage, minimum hourly. I guess, why weren't they covering what the OFL thought about that? Oh, that's the first question I had.
Okay, well, that's a great question, and clearly the author of this piece is Martin Reg Cohen, and like Martin Reg Cohen himself is a Unifor member. He's a card-carrying, dues-paying member of Unifor, as are most of all of the staff over there at the Toronto Star, and the Star already has a bent towards the Liberals. They've always been pushing the Liberal message. So he writes a story about two union leaders, and he couches his whole argument in the language of these are two senior union leaders of the labor movement, as if somehow that these two individuals are speaking for labor, when in actual fact, Jerry Dias himself doesn't even belong to the House of Labor. He left two or three years ago because the CLC would not give him the permission to raid other unions. Smokey Thomas, you know, during my time when I was at the OFL, he disaffiliated his union from the OFL. So, I mean, these are not representatives of the labor movement. The irony of it all is, as you say yourself, meeting at the same time as these two individuals are appearing on the front page of the Toronto Star. There's a meeting taking place of over 1,000 delegates to the OFL convention. And that you would think would be the story that these folks are meeting. Well, these folks were incensed at the idea that Jerry Dias and Smokey Thomas would stand beside a conservative premier who has actually killed the minimum wage that was proposed 3 years ago by Kathleen Wynne and fought for organizations such as the Workers' Action Center. This campaign about the minimum wage has been waged on the streets by the community, by low-wage workers who don't belong to unions. The union movement had a minimal role in actually raising the minimum wage campaign. So it was galling to see two union leaders try to come in and steal the thunder of these community action groups who have long ago moved off of $15 an hour. $15 an hour was being talked about back in 2011. It actually was 14 at that time. We were talking about $14 an hour. Since then, we have moved on to a living wage, which is closer to $20 an hour. So here we have two of these union leaders who have basically nothing to do with the campaign around the minimum wage, coming in, trying to steal the thunder at the last moment, by agreeing with a conservative premier that we can jack it up by a couple of cents, 10 or 15, 20, whatever it was, to bring it to $15 an hour. And basically undermine and undercut the campaign that's been waged on the streets right now by the Workers' Action Center, migrant workers, Uber workers, all of these folks, the gig workers, all fighting to get a living wage. And these two guys come in and basically put their stamp on $15 an hour. So that's the part that was so disgraceful. And the guy who's writing this story starts to praise these guys as somehow hard-nosed bargaining union leaders. Like Jerry Dias is the one that went from $30, $35 an hour in the Ottawa plants to all the new hires earning $16 an hour. He closed the plant under his watch. He rehired a couple of hundred workers, and now he's taking credit for it, wants them to name a street after him in Oshawa and take the credit. You know, when 6,000 workers get laid off and he hire back between 300 and 1,000, and somehow he wants some credit for this? Like, it's so galling on so many different levels.
Yes. Well, you know, so I it struck me. I mean, he uses this language, my friends, he speaks of them and they speak of him as a friend. I noticed that Smokey Thomas, for example, said, I've gotten to know him. Oh, this is, you know, this always worries all union members, that their negotiators go off and sit at the table and they come out maybe on the short end and they say, you know, I kind of got to know him. That is not what you want in the way of a representative.
Well, look, when we were fighting at the end, when I was president of the OFL, we were fighting against him. He was talking about coming in with the eliminating the RAND formula and bringing in US right to work legislation. That was his campaign when he started off the election in 2014. Smokey Thomas went on Sun TV at the time and basically said, oh, shucks, you know, Tim Hudak, I got to know him. And he's, you know, he and I are from the same kind of farming communities and I could get along with Tim. And we're thinking like, what the F in hell is this guy talking about? Completely undermining that.
It's not a golf game.
You know what I mean? So here we go again. You know, we've been talking about how he can get along with Ford. Now this, and how Ford did a wonderful job during the pandemic. But hold a second, let's roll back the clock a little bit. There's been thousands of residents of long-term care facilities have lost their lives. He had to bring in the army to basically conduct investigations in these long-term care facilities and come out with the most horrendous report, blaming the Conservatives for basically falling down on the job. And yet here you have a union leader who represents some of those workers in long-term care facilities, essentially saying that this man did a brilliant job of managing the pandemic. Like, what planet is this guy Smokey on?
Yeah, and I noticed that, I don't know whether it was the article by Reg Cohen or it was a Toronto Star article I read, which was explaining the whole situation, how these two union leaders ended up with Ford. The explanation was that, well, the ground has shifted and labor, it said, and they used the term big labor is no longer supportive of the NDP. Now, you pointed out, well, listen, there were 900 delegates at the OFL and they voted to support the NDP. I mean, actually the trend is in the opposite way, isn't it? I mean, the Canadian Labor Congress, over the head of Hassan, decided they were going to support the NDP.
Right on. There's a couple of issues here, though. So if you take a look on the face of it, what Reg Cohen was trying to say was that somehow Labour has now abandoned the NDP as a consequence of these two guys standing with a Conservative leader. But when you delve into it a little bit, you'll see, well, hold on a second. Jerry Dias has never supported the NDP. Jerry Dias has made it absolutely clear. It doesn't matter whether you're a federal Liberal member or an Ontario Liberal member, he's in your camp and he's the one that's standing there with his arm around Kathleen Wynne and he's almost making love to Trudeau in one of the photographs that we see. So clearly, if there's any abandonment taking place here, it is Jerry Dias and moving Unifor away from the Liberals, not away from the NDP because he was never there in the first place. Smokey says he's agnostic. He's never supported any political party, he said. Although, if you go back and check the record, he's been on all sides of the coin. But for this, the purposes of this story, he's basically saying he doesn't support anybody. So what Reg Cohn is doing is typical. He's taking the liberal line, and anything that can damage the NDP, he's going to spin that into one of his stories. And the unethical part of it is, this man doesn't have the decency to come out and identify to his readers that he is a Unifor member, and he's writing about Unifor, and more than likely he was fed half of this story by Unifor, because I read a piece that said he'd been tipped off the night before that Ford made the announcement. Well, who do you think tipped him off? Jerry would have tipped him off to say, come out to my meeting tomorrow, because Ford is going to raise the minimum wage. Yes. Now, you're right, at the same time, 900 delegates at the OFL vote overwhelmingly to support the NDP. And this guy, Reg Cohn, has not written a single sentence about the rest of the Labour movement having supported the NDP, which is the real story here. But that doesn't suit, you know, his agenda and the Toronto Star's agenda, which is basically to damage the NDP.
Absolutely, from beginning. And by the way, doesn't this present an opportunity? And I know you have, as a title of your book, A Grander Vision, and you're also a very combative individual. That's why everybody loved your leadership, actually, in QP and OFL. This is a time, isn't it, for counterpunch or counterattack. Shouldn't the OFL say, let's put the record straight about our position on the NDP and this business of two people who are not supportive of the of the strategy of the OFL have been paraded as Labour leaders. Let's get the record straight.
Well, Phil, you know, it's one of the things that I'm so disappointed in a lot of the Labour leaders. I mean, here is a golden opportunity for them, not only just to say that the OFL supports, but for them to come out publicly and essentially say, hold on a second here, Jerry Dyes and Smokey Thomas does not speak for the Labour movement either in Ontario or across this country. And there are senior union leaders from all of the big unions, my own included, QP, UFCW, Steel, IAM, all the teacher unions, you know, SEIU. There's lots of opportunities.
Big Labour. That's big Labour. That's the real deal.
Exactly. To come out and say, hold on a second here, Reg Cohn. This does not, you know, Jerry Dyes does not represent the interests of the Labour movement. And we are not following his lead in terms of going and supporting Tories. We won't stand on the Tories, nor will we be asking our members to support the Tories, no matter what these two individuals say. But the silence from the other union leaders, it makes them complicit almost. Why they're afraid to take on Jerry Dyes and Smokey Thomas in a very public way, because listen, they, like Dyes and Smokey Thomas, they've basically given the finger to the union leaders of this country and of this province. And without a response from them, a very public response, that you'll never check these two individuals unless somehow somebody is going to stand up to them and say enough is enough. Don't speak to the Labour movement.
There's the issue of false news. I mean, actually, I mean, that whole little story that they created with Ford, that's all false. I mean, these are not the leaders of the Labour movement. And there are identifiable leaders of OFL, CLC, who are supposed to stand up and say, you guys are misrepresenting the situation. We have a raider here. He lost. We beat him. He tried to organize the transit workers. We beat him. He tried to take over the hotel workers. We beat him. So stop putting him on a platform.
That's right. You know, the other side of it is, here we have a golden opportunity on the run-up to an election to take on this guy, because what's going to happen is, unless they take him on, we're going to be left fighting on the terrain that's been marked out right now by the Tories, trying to pretend that somehow all these unions are his great friends and they've switched and they flipped over. You know, and the other side of it is, I mean, if this journalist did just a little bit of research beyond speaking to the Unifor researchers, if he was to go out and speak to union leaders and their unions and try to find out, like, for example, the OFL their convention lit up with people. The whole convention was bogged down for 2 or 3 days with people demanding to get to the microphone to be able to speak about what Jerry Dyes and Smokey Thomas had done to the Labour movement and how they wanted resolutions on the floor show that the NDP, or sorry, that the Labour movement does not support what Dyess and company were saying. So, you know, this is the point. If this guy was an ethical reporter or a journalist, he'd get the true story instead of trying to spin half a story. And then what I noticed is the other reporters at the Toronto Star, they're all retweeting their buddies. I mean, they're all uniform members, and they're all retweeting Reg Cohn's article, right? So, of course, I tried to take on Reg Cohn, and he gets personal. You know what I mean? He gets snarky and he gets personal to try to shut down and change the topic, right?
By the way, I got to tell our listeners, this is CIUT and the Taylor Report. Please, by the way, check out Sid Ryan Twitter, because you've been having a fun go round with him, and I hope for more rounds. It's like watching a good fight, and you're way ahead on points. I don't know if it's going to be a knockout, but I enjoy it. But by the way, don't they have a little bit of a problem? And people ought to make them uncomfortable. If they're with Unifor and they're going to be going around doing labor stories, they ought to be said, "Hey, no, wait a minute, you're a Unifor member, and you were interviewing me, right?
Yeah,
we have a problem with you." That should be the way they're treated.
You know, what some folks should do is actually make a complaint to the ombudsperson at the Toronto Star and say, this is completely unethical type of reporting and journalism, where you get a Unifor member writing about Unifor. I mean, even if you look at his Twitter feed, he's not only just out there, you know, supporting Jerry Dias's angle on all these stories, he's taken up his case with other people are writing, saying negative stuff about Jerry Dyess on Twitter. This journalist is jumping in to protect Jerry Dyess. And I'm thinking, like, what the hell is going on here? Like, since when does a journalist become an advocate for any union leader? You know what I mean? Like, how about a bit of bipartisanship here? Why can't we have, ethical journalism and no partisan commentary coming out of folks who actually, they control the pen, they control buckets of ink, and here they are essentially pushing one union leader.
This whole thing of the Unifor has had charmed life, actually. I mean, as long as I can remember, there's always been a media bypassing of other unions, and particularly OFL-CLC, going straight to Hargrove, straight to Jerry, and then they say, okay, well, big labor has spoken. And of course, as you point out, it's Toronto Star is a Liberal Party, and the Unifor was the one that brought the poison into the tent, I recall, with the words, the expression strategic voting. And my memory serves, you were one of the people who called it for what it was, because everybody started debating, oh, no, it's not actually, maybe it would work here, it might not work there, but now you said, no, this is just a Liberal strategy.
Well, look, I lost Oshawa when I ran for the Oshawa underneath Jack Layton in 2004, I think it was. I lost by 380 votes. And even Jack Layton and the CBC came out, essentially said, Ryan was winning this until the Liberals came out at the end and talked about a vote for the NDP was a vote for the Conservatives. So vote Liberal to keep out the Conservatives. So like the whole strategic voting message essentially undermines my campaign at the last moment. And of course, you know, Buzz Hargrove had been out draping a jacket in that campaign around Paul Martin. And the message to everybody in Oshawa and everywhere else was the Liberals are the friends of the auto workers, right?
Yeah.
I mean, look, you think about it, the auto sector of the Toronto Star newspaper, you know, the pullout section of the automobiles, right? They vote in Jerry Dyess as the man of the year. Now, hang on a second here. First off, these are all advertisers for the Toronto Star. And then secondly, Dyess has become the shill for the industry, for corporations. Every time he goes to a bargaining table, the auto sector extracts a concession out of him that he will go and lobby the Liberals at Queen's Park and the Liberals at the federal level to pump billions of dollars into the auto sector. So essentially what's happening is it's the federal government and provincial government are paying the wages of auto workers by giving them billions of dollars of concessions. So is it any wonder that the auto manufacturers and so on love Jerry Dyess and call him the auto sector man of the year? would they make it out to be somehow, the Stardust, that somehow this is a great negotiator? When in actual fact, he's depriving the healthcare sector of precious dollars. Instead of putting them into multinational, filthy rich corporations, we should be putting it into long-term care facilities, putting it into post-secondary education, making education more free. And on it goes. Every time he gets a dollar out of the federal or provincial government, it's a dollar we take away from healthcare and education.
Yeah. We're speaking to Sid Ryan. He is a former president of OFL and of CUPE, and he's the author of A Grander Vision. And boy, we need one. And I noticed, by the way, in your Twitter, and people should follow you because a lot of labor people write to you, and everybody's looking for, frankly, a grander vision, a little more, certainly a more, for lack of a better word, aggressive approach towards the companies and the politicians. Do you see a trend? I mean, my impression, I hate to make fun of it, but I used to always say, why do they call it a labor movement? I never see anything move. We've had the head of the CLC was this man, Hassan, and everybody tolerated his sitting there, even though he was a uniform man. And he was given an extra 2 years when he should have actually been out. There seems to be a kind of a deal where let's keep the peace. Let's not shake the place up. But you described the OFL as being a lively place where people really are going to the mics saying, let's shake it up.
Yeah. You see, here's the thing. There's a world of difference between most of the union leaders who are the ones that get into a back room and decide what the strategy will be during the election, and the union membership on the ground, which and the activists that you actually hear at conventions. The conventions are far more active and militant than what the leaders are, right? So even though the membership at the base level have now decided that we are going to be supporting the NDP in the next election, the problem is the purse strings are held by people like Smokey Thomas and others who undemocratically just ignore what was decided at the OFL convention and come out with their stupid strategies of strategic voting again. Like, it's always this vote for a better choice. What does a better choice mean? Dog whistle to vote liberal is what it means, right? The CLC underneath Yusuf fell into that same trap. They were constantly coming out with these, the better choice was their campaign. So who was the better choice? It could be anybody, right? But to them, it really meant the liberals because they didn't want the conservatives. Now, Jerry Diaz has run a campaign just only a few weeks ago. He was talking about it. ABC, anybody but conservative. So now, just there from last week, what does he do? He stands with the conservative. So is his members going to be confused about where Jerry Diaz stands? You know what I mean? So these folks are completely muddying the waters when it comes to electoral politics. Yeah. When you think about it, you've got Andrea Horvath. I mean, and I'm no great big fan of Andrea Horvath, I can tell you up front. But I'm not going to diss her opportunity and try to screw up her opportunity to form the next government. She's sitting out there today as the official opposition in Ontario. You've got a Liberal leader that nobody has ever heard of. We don't know who he is. So the chance of trying to win this election for the NDP is multiple times better than what it was in the last election. And what do we do? We have two union leaders come out and try to undermine that strategy just on the run into the election. It's disgraceful politics, it really is. And I only hope, I know that Jerry Dice is retiring in 2022. Smokey, he's 5 or 6 years beyond retirement right now, but will he run again? He probably will. But will his members finally wake up and say, we've had enough of this. We need a young progressive person to take over this union and take it in a completely different direction.
Yeah. There's some signs of that, certainly, because of that GM debacle and the whole way that they tried to finesse it. I think there's as much anger as I've seen in the uniform ranks. We're speaking to Sid Ryan. And on this matter of the little question of how does something like this occur where Ford gets these two gentlemen to stand with him. If it has to be a question, well, you know, Ford, why wouldn't the union leader just say, well, you're going to announce $15 minimum wage, good for you. So do it yourself. Why do you need me? And why would I want to go there? Because as everybody has already pointed out, look, 15, you know, we sat on the $15 for 3 or 4 years. So, and I have to raise a second question connected with it. Are they expecting something back? Or do they want Ford to help them against the other unions by any chance? Like in the case of Justin Trudeau and Jerry, I got the impression he was hoping the Liberals would help him out against the CLC and the OFL.
Well, these folks, you have to understand, both Dias and Thomas, they're both opportunists. So I think they know that, first off, there's no more Senate seats left in Ontario. You know, Yusuf has taken them, and there was a mayor of Cornwall or something took up the other seat. So there's no space there at the federal level. So we know we're coming into the provincial. I think both of them know that chances of this guy in the Liberal forming a government are pretty slim. So being the opportunists that they are, they're taking a look at where will the soft landing come in? Well, there's a better chance maybe in their minds that the Conservatives might win this election, re-election. And there are these two guys standing up there supporting the Conservative leader. Jerry coming up to retirement. Smokey, in all likelihood, will be pushed out into retirement this year as well. Are they looking for a Labour board appointment? Are they looking for some cushy number down the road? Who knows? I mean, why do you betray your principles? It's, I mean, you know, the world is full of people who turn in their own. Take a look at Yusuf when he was leader of the CLC. He had to apply over a year in advance of getting that position. He had to formally put it in writing and apply for it. So he's out there representing union leaders, goes out and supports this guy, Murno, remember, to become the CEO of the OECD. And you'd say to yourself, wait a second, this guy, while he was president of the CLC, supporting this Liberal minister, knowing full well that he was already written to the prime minister looking for a job as a senator. I mean, this is the kind of sick politics that's taken root in the Labour movement, with certain individuals, not all, but certainly these individuals. And Unifor typically is at the heart of all these shenanigans. When you boil it all down, Unifor is at the center of most of this, what I call shitty politics.
Yeah. And it gives rise to this problem of being able to organize or even maintain leader and membership. Because as soon as one act like that puts a golden argument, you know, in the hands of your enemy, because he says, oh, look at these guys. Come on. You want me to join? You want me to pay the dues? And he just flew out of the CLC office and landed in the Senate. So you want me to be one of his guys, right?
Well, you know, and again, getting back to this, this Reg Cohn, you know, the guy who writes the story for the Star. I mean, he starts spinning this story. Another angle that he's spinning is, oh, these two guys are pragmatic. They're hard-nosed pragmatists who are not purists. But he's using this argument on Twitter, you know, that the purity test just doesn't work anymore. So in other words, not have any politics, sell your soul to whoever it is willing to offer you a little, you know, some peanuts as we're getting with the minimum wage increase. And you'll get union leaders standing there just to be, so what they thought would be soaking up some glory. What they didn't realize was the backlash that they've created is pretty bad. I've not seen it this bad actually in this long time, which is great to see that finally the grassroots are speaking up. If only now we can have union leaders to join in where their own members are at and call these guys out. I mean, that's what's needed.
Yeah. Well, Sid, I wish you were writing an outline, a program for labor or some such. I mean, if I don't like to burden you with work, but I mean, it seems to me they need the voice that you provided and are providing in through Twitter and, of course, your book, A Grander Vision. But don't you agree? We should get some programmatic writing done by people who've put their life in the labor movement and identify the problems and say, let's get rid of this.
Yeah. No, I'd love to see sort of a labor manifesto. You know, people like Tony Leah and And Sam Dindon, and I'd certainly be willing to help, and some of the folks who could put our minds to this and say, you know, this is the agenda we ought to be following. Now, I know that you've come up with a really good action plan at the OFL. But the problem that there will be, will the existing union leaders who are responsible for implementing this campaign, will they follow? Will they follow through? And will the new leadership at the CLC, who right now are pretty well unknown because not an awful lot of people know them, but that's not to say that they're not good progressive people, and will they come out with a stronger position around the NDP and around progressive politics? Maybe they will. You have to wait and see there, I suppose. But right now, the most pressing issue is the election that's coming up in another 6 or 7 months. And you can see already that the Toronto Star and these two union leaders are trying to take the Labour movement right down a dead end alley. And we need the progressives to come out and say, look, enough of this. We're going in a different direction.
Yeah. By the way, that's where the energy comes from, actually. I mean, you can't, you want unity, but not the unity of a cemetery. You want the unity of the fighting people who are arguing even amongst themselves to advance things.
That's right. And, you know, there'd be nothing better if the president of, you know, to put them on the spot, the steel worker president was to come out and basically say, you know, Smokey and Jerry, what you did there was wrong. What you did there is hurting the labor movement. You're hurting union members. And then have Fred Hahn maybe come out behind him and say, I agree with the president of the steel workers. This cannot go on. You guys cannot be, you know, going off on your own, pretending that somehow you're speaking for labor. That's what's really needed to turn the corner here. And then once we turn that corner, then we can start getting into what you just talked about, which is, okay, now what is the manifesto going forward for the labor movement that we're going to be trying to push the NDP to implement? Rather than splintering ourselves, like what Dias is doing is trying to splinter ourselves between, you know, the conservatives, the liberals, and a sprinkling of NDP that they'll support. So our strength in the labor movement is completely diluted across three political parties. And we cannot elect progressives if that's what we're going to do.
Well, the best thing I got from reading your Twitter was that when you pointed out there were 900 delegates and that people were going to the mics, as you describe it. That's the OFL. Those meetings are very important. And seeing each other, hearing each other, the energy builds. Well, Sid, it's great talking to you. Sid Ryan, former president of the Ontario Federation of Labour and CUPE. And I look forward to reading you on Twitter.
Excellent. The last little thing I'll just say, Phil, is one thing I was very pleased about is that the OFL leadership were there on this issue. They were very supportive of putting forth a position that clearly articulated support for the NDP, even though they were getting pushback from some folks like the Jerry Dias of the world and the Smokey of the world. They stood their ground and they basically proposed to the membership an action plan that included total and solid support for the NDP. That is a huge victory right there and then for going forward. And at least now there's the semblance of a bit of a fight back. Only if the delegates and the other union leaders now will get in behind the OFL action plan, I think we could see good things in this next election. So it's been a pleasure to talk to you. I really appreciated the opportunity.
Yeah, well, thank you. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT.